some of you may be wondering why we're playing the theme from the Three Stooges. And, well, there's two reasons behind that. Number one is, when I compare the three of us to this guy, that's what I feel like, number one. Number two, I watched him on a game show. And they asked him a question about who's on first and what's on second and all that kind of stuff. And one of those, you ever seen that? Where they?
Oh, yeah.
Bob Saget was the host. And Bob is one of the biggest fans of the Three Stooges.
He's also one of the crudest human beings.
He is an absolutely dirty human being. Candace Cameron's a pal of mine, and she has told me some stories.
It's not what you would think based on what they sell on the show.
No.
It's the polar opposite of that.
No. And I swear he was trying to get out of hosting, what was it, America's Funniest Videos, because he just, you could tell he did not want to be there. He just did not care.
50,
at all.
50 grand a month, though, make you stick around.
Was that what it was?
I would imagine at that point, mid-90s. Yeah.
Christopher Langan is with us on the show. Some people like to immerse themselves in reality. Others prefer to think about reality, to dissect it, analyze it, evaluate it. And Chris has always liked to do both, but only in keeping with the fact that they form an inseparable whole, a unified reality with experiential, ontological, and epistemological aspects that cannot, in the final analysis, be divided. You know who talks like that up here in Canada? Conrad Black. Conrad Black is the king of the commas. He has the longest run-on, most digestible sentences of any human being here in Canada.
But Jordan Peterson can go on some nice little
Jordan's, yeah, he can. Oh, that'd be an interesting conversation. Christopher Langan. Chris, wait, can I call you Chris, or should I call you Sir Langan?
Chris is just fine.
Okay, Chris. Chris, have you and who would you like to have a little verbal dance with? Of all the talking heads out there these days, I know it's not Johnny Wonder. I know you don't care about him. I know it's not Drew Marshall. What about... what's his name again? The guy that
Peterson.
Jordan Peterson. Would you like to have a conversation with him?
Well, yeah, I certainly wouldn't turn down an opportunity to converse with Jordan, but yeah. He doesn't know who I am. I mean, he's pretty much a big shot these days, I think.
He's exploded.
I think he would probably know who you. I think he would probably know who you are, Chris. Actually,
yeah. When was the last time you guys talked, Johnny? Chris.
A couple of months ago, I think we talked a little bit. Should I tell the audience how I found Chris?
Please do.
Chris, because I think it's an interesting story. So,
yes.
Christmas time last year, I'm up in the middle of the night watching YouTube. And whenever I go on YouTube, and if I can't sleep with two young kids, I go on metaphysics, things about God and whatever.
Yeah.
I fall upon this video about this man named Chris out of Missouri. And I'm like, okay, this is crazy. So my film producer hat goes on. And I start looking at the videos. I'm like, okay, who's making this movie? Like, what Ron Howard, Steven Spielberg has the rights to this one? When's this movie coming out? And it wasn't out yet. So literally, I start trolling the internet trying to find some way to contact somebody that would have any connection to Chris.
With Christopher Langan.
Right. So after some searches, you know, a couple weeks, two, 3 weeks go by, finally Gina actually emails me back. And it's like, hey, you know, we got your emails. What can we do for you?
And that's Christopher's missus.
That's Christopher's beautiful missus. And I email back, like, I am a film producer from Los Angeles. I have a total agenda here. I have motives. I have everything you can think of. I really, really want to just, how do I talk to Chris?
Yeah.
And she's like, he can talk to you tomorrow at 8 o'clock. And at that moment, I realize I'm going to have to get on the phone and talk to this man.
Yeah.
And I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
And he's obviously very, 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 very smart.
Yeah.
So, the one thing talking to Chris, he obviously very humble man, very smart man, but gave me the opportunity to try to explain what it is I thought that he was trying to do.
Yes.
I was in the ballpark, but I'll end with this. He said something to me that literally it's the one thing that I will say to people in reference to Chris Langan that blows everybody's hair back.
Yeah.
And I think one of the questions I asked you, Chris, was kind of like, why aren't you a billionaire? Like, why, you know, how come, you know, if you're obviously very smart, how come you haven't made billions and billions of dollars? Because typically that's what people expect the smart people to do. And his answer, and I'm going to paraphrase a little bit, but his answer was, I was basically entrusted with the knowledge, like, I don't know why I'm so bright. I don't know why I see the world the way that I do, but ultimately, my responsibility to you, to my wife, to the world, is to answer the questions that nobody else can. That's why I'm doing this.
Yeah.
And not to handle money, not to do that, but my responsibility to you is to answer the tough questions. And I'm like, literally, my hair almost fell out of my head.
Yeah.
And I'll let him go from here. So let's let Chris go.
Well, that's all the time we have for Christopher Langan.
I think that's a good introduction, though. If you want to put into context who he is, there you go.
Oh, man.
Hey. He's gotten to know him and Johnny very well so far. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he's doing well. Doing well.
Yeah, well, the world does not need another techie billionaire. We have enough of those, and they're really misbehaving lately. I've been censored heavily myself on the internet. You know, we've all got troll problems out there, but I have a worse one than most people, simply because I do have what I claim are answers to fundamental questions. And this is, you know, there's a tremendous noise factor out there these days with everybody claiming to have the answer. But I've had an answer that has been out there since the late 1980s. It was actually announced all over the world. It was even in popular science here in the U.S., but it has remained on the back burner basically because academia, everybody in academia, of course, has their own explanation for why things work as they do. And they all think of themselves as being the smartest person in the world, so there's no room for a guy like me out there. So here I still am, plugging away, and hoping that people will finally listen to what it is.
Well, okay, so, look, man, I mean, where do you even start with a guy like you? I mean, I was reading and listening and watching, and here are the top 3 points that I came up with about you. Are you ready, Chris? This is what I've come up with.
Okay, it better be good.
No pressure.
You can't drive, you're divorced twice, and you're a neat freak. That came up on the screen in that game show that you were on, and I couldn't believe that stuff was there.
What? It said what?
It said you can't drive, you're divorced twice, and you're a neat freak. Are those things true?
I've only been married once. I'm still married to my wife. I can drive. I'm a very good driver. If you saw this house, you wouldn't think of me as a neat freak at all.
That's so weird.
Not at least half on my wife.
Oh, yeah, okay. All right. What I want to know is, you've said, is faith relevant? You've said, faith is dead. People no longer have faith in anything. We're going to have to make logic do where faith once stood.
Yeah, well, you know, there's always been this dichotomy between faith and knowledge. You know, would people tend to separate it. There are actual old schools of philosophy on why and how those two things should be separate, but it's really irrational to separate them. I mean, it's irrational to have faith in something of which you have no knowledge, because if you have no knowledge of it, you can't even identify it. And it's absurd to have knowledge in something in which you have no faith, because if you know it, then, of course, you should have faith in it. So you really can't separate the two, and I'm just trying to bring the two of those things back together.
Okay, so I have realized in my own personal journey, Chris, that doubt is more compatible with faith than certainty. That's a tagline I've been hanging on to. How does that sit with you, that line? Doubt is more compatible with faith than certainty.
Doubt is more compatible with faith than certainty only because faith exists in the absence of knowledge. If faith were coupled with knowledge, then you would have a little bit of certainty there to go along with the doubt, and there wouldn't be that asymmetry. Of course, we're always going to have a certain amount of uncertainty about what reality is and where it's going, but there's also a basis for knowledge on that score, and we need to recognize what that basis is.
So Solomon, in his pursuit of wisdom, came to the end of it and said, everything's worthless. He kind of got all, you know, gothic on the world.
A dose of cynicism there.
Yeah, a little bit. How do you not let cynicism run your show?
Well, I'm a content-oriented kind of guy. I actually have a very structured theory, and if I work within that framework, I can actually get answers for questions that are important to me, and there's just no room for cynicism there. I mean, there's plenty of reason to go on and to continue, because I have a love of knowledge, and that's basically what life has given me. That's my lot, and I enjoy it as best I can.
What was the last bit of knowledge that you, I guess, discovered or dug up or kind of brought into your world and life and lived it out that really transformed you? So information, knowledge is just knowledge unless it becomes something that's transformational. So what is the piece of knowledge that transformed you the most?
Well, I guess it's that reality talks to itself. You ever talk to yourself? I mean, you stand in the mirror and give yourself a kind of a soliloquy. Well, reality talks to itself the same way, and it uses a language spoken by itself, to itself, and about itself. Now, if you unpack that, you get pretty much to everything you need to know about everything. And that's what the CTMU is. That's my theory. And I guess I would have to tender that as the most significant piece of knowledge I've gained.
Okay, now, you know, I asked this question a lot of guests over the last 16 years, and it's the whole, basically what I'm saying is, dude, how do you succinctly pull apart CTMU for, let's say you're sitting beside a hockey player on a plane and it's about to crash and you'd like to get this into this guy, into this meathead's brain. How do you make that transfer happen?
Well, you know, I use that, just what I just said, basically the part about reality talking to itself. This is something, obviously, reality would have to have some kind of unity or consciousness to do that. These are details. They can be worked out, but basically it's that image of reality talking to itself using a certain closed language, a language that has mathematical closure with respect to certain functions or operations. And this can be expressed as the language is spoken by reality, to reality, about reality. That's the closure aspect. Everything is all about reality, you see.
Okay, so when he, I'm looking at Johnny Wonder here, who's, he's a pretty sharp cat. But do you, I know I should be able to track with this guy somewhat. I'm not a complete putz.
Right.
But I can't help but wonder. And Chris, it's got to be so frustrating for you dealing with idiots day in and day out. When you've got some golden nuggets to pass on to the world, and you have to spend 80% of your cognitive processing dumbing things down.
Yeah, that's very, very frustrating. You're 100% right about that. As a matter of fact, properly dumbing things down so that anybody can understand them is an even harder to solve problem than the problems whose solutions you're trying to explain.
Well, I'll say something, though, because the interesting thing is part of the recipe to what you're sort of, you know, after meeting you and talking to Gina and, you know, and getting to know you guys a little bit, you know, I think obviously your pursuit is to come up with the answer. It may be somebody else's job in relation to you to deliver it to the people in a way that everybody understands. So it's like, you know, I'm not 100% certain that, you know, once the ball drops and it is a nugget of information that can get unleashed on the world, I'm not even 100% sure if it's going to be Gina, your wife, that's going to be able to have to tell everybody exactly how it works. Because, you know, I would say half of the stuff that you and I will talk about, I absorb half of it, which I'm very proud of. Like, I can absorb half of it and be like, okay, I'm in the ballpark. But I don't know if it's meant for you to deliver it yourself. I think it's going to have to be delivered in little cheeseburgers to somebody else. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just sort of toying with the idea of putting out some videos and actually speaking about the whole thing in baby language, drawing pictures for people. As much as I can, and I hope that will do something. Because, you know, if you go into academia and you wait for a scholarly author to do this for you, you got to find somebody who has both high intelligence and a perfectly open mind. And these days, those are very rare commodities.
Yep.
So it's hard. I mean, I can't simply wait here for someone who's qualified to do this. I have to try to do it myself, and that's what I think we're going to be doing here.
It's like the little Jurassic Park videos when they first get to the park and they put them through that little ride.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, got that. Chris, who would you say would be, in your opinion, the most intelligent people on the planet in the last 100 years? Maybe two or three.
Well, you know, brains have been shrinking steadily since our Cro-Magnon ancestors walked the earth. Actually, I think that the average human brain is only about three-quarters as large as it was back then. So intelligence is an increasingly rare commodity. And I know that people don't want to hear that, but it looks like humanity is almost going backwards. We're selecting for certain traits that aren't necessarily very adaptive. And that's what has been happening. And yet there have been some very intelligent people who have come along in the past several hundred years. Of course, guys like Isaac Newton, Charles Darwin, Werner Heisenberg, Schrodinger, this kind of guy, you can't undersell their intelligence. Bertrand Russell, Fyodor Dostoevsky, there are all kinds of great artists and scientists out there who come to brilliant realizations and truths about reality, and I don't sell any of them short.
Okay, so what's your, do you have like a visceral reaction when people start talking to you about Stephen Hawking?
Well, you know, ABC News offered me an interview, back when they interviewed me for 2020, back in the late 1990s, they tried to set up an interview between Stephen Hawking and me. And unfortunately, Stephen, he was, of course, confined to a wheelchair and surrounded by these academic, this guard, you know, academic security experts, that whose job it was to protect him from the hoi polloi.
Right.
And so they somehow managed to nix it, and the interview never came off. But had I been able to meet with Stephen Hawking, I think that we'd have had a very fruitful discussion in some respects.
I had Stephen Hawking's wife on the show a little while ago. She had written a book, and his ex-wife, you know, they were the ones. The movie Theory About Everything was based on her book. And, you know, I asked her about this because the deal is, as far as I'm concerned, it's interesting is that, you know, he claimed, people would say he's an atheist. She says she's a believer. She told me that she didn't think he was an atheist. She thought he was more of an agnostic. So let's talk about those terms, agnosticism, atheism, believer, because I really want to put some labels on you.
Well, you'd have to call me a theist, but as far as the problem between Stephen and his wife was concerned, that sounds to me like a problem of semantics. It sounds like maybe if you'd had a kind of deist god of the kind that Einstein appeared to believe in, that Hawking would have been in favor of that. On the other hand, you know, his wife may believe in a more doctrinaire religious kind of god. God is defined in various ways. The way I define God is as ultimate reality. And if you think about it, really any other definition of God is meaningless. God has to be ultimate, otherwise there has to be something higher than God or more ultimate than God, in which case it's not really God, is it? I mean, there's something higher. If there's something higher, then that has to be God.
Yeah.
And that, of course, evokes the old argument, the ontological argument of St. Anselm about the existence of God. And so that's more or less what I'm into. What I've done is I've formalized God. If you read the Bible, I mean, everybody's had a little bit of exposure to the Bible, or at least most people have in North America.
Yeah.
There's a verse in there, John 1:1, and it says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." And this is a very pregnant sort of passage in the Bible, and you can actually turn this into a whole view of God and reality, how God is reality in the ultimate sense. And then you can start investigating that structure and picking it all apart and parsing it and organizing it, and you actually get to knowledge about what God is.
Okay, Chris, selfishly, I have interviewing a lot of people over the last number of years because of my own spiritual journey or experiences. It's gotten a little loopy on me here. So for 30 years, I was part of the evangelical tribe of certainty. For, let's see, about 7 years, I willingly walked away from it all, having been a pastor, having been part of the evangelical scene, the certainty thing. I walked away from it all. I stopped going to church and the whole thing. And I tried to strip away all tribal conditioning to see if what I believed was real or if I believed that it was real because of tribal conditioning. And one of my reasons that I have a problem with my belief is because of the lack of what I would say is tangible interaction. So I was sold on a God that is tangibly interactive. And now I'm sitting there going, well, I'm not as freaked out as I once was. It felt like I was going through some dark night of the soul kind of thing. And I had more of an adverse reaction from those certainists within the evangelical tribe than, I mean, that was the fascinating thing, was people's reaction to my journey. So now someone forced me to come up with a label for, well, what are you now? It was a Tony Campolo. He said to me one day, what are you? So I said, well, I would say I'm a red letter agnostic theist. So couple things. One, having heard a little bit of my journey, I kind of bailed on things because of what I would say the lack of tangible interaction with this God that I was sold would be very tangibly interactive. Do you think that's an infantile reaction?
You know, I hate to have to say this, but in a way it is. Because when you define God properly as ultimate reality, which is what I spoke about, every experience that you have is a tangible interaction with God. Now, you can't recognize God as being the entity that is making things happen. But in order to actualize your destiny, things have to happen in a way that you don't necessarily perceive. In other words, you have one event here, and it kind of turns you around, and then there's another distant event that happens, and all of these non-local events add together to guide you in the proper direction. But you don't see all of these events at once, right? So you can't recognize a hand that is actually reaching into reality and moving things around at your behest.
Right.
Right? Okay, so this is it. Basically, it's the linkage between the problematical linkage between ontology and epistemology. What is and what you can know about what is. And unfortunately, we have certain epistemic limitations. We can't necessarily get to the bottom of how things are caused in our lives. Mm-hmm. And this prevents us from seeing the existence of God or achieving certainty about it. Now, the way I go about achieving certainty is actually going back to logic. And then you can use logic to put together a very advanced system in which you can actually derive truths about reality. Not necessarily truths about specific things that happen in reality, but about the overall patterns in which they happen.
Okay, I'm tracking with this. So basically, I felt like I was bailing on my belief in God, when in reality what I was doing was simply throwing out the belief in God that I was taught from the evangelical certainists based on this tangible encounter stuff.
Exactly. The tangible encounter, I'm not quite sure what that means, but I think it means that basically you're supposed to see God's hand there locally, right in front of your face in your life, and you can't always do that.
Well, no, but it comes, Chris, to me it comes from the relational aspect of Christianity that's been sold, the God the Father thing. So the Father figure that God is supposed to be, you know, people say, well, God has blessed you. You've got so much, but you've been blessed. No, I don't want God's stuff. I don't want Daddy's stuff. What I want is for my Father. I'm going to reach over to Johnny Lang here. What I want is for my Father to just reach out and grab my shoulder, you know, just kind of go, it's all right, kid. I got you. Like, you're doing okay.
But my question is,
how
do you know he's not?
Oh, shut up.
Because it doesn't look the way you want it to look?
That's a great question, and I hate you for it. Yeah.
Yeah. The fact of the matter is, that's exactly what's happening.
What?
God is taking you by the shoulder and guiding you around, but you can't feel it all the time.
Yeah. So, in other words, I could be saying that. In other words, the evangelicals are a dangerous group of human beings.
Some of them are, unfortunately, because they oversimplify and they make people believe things that they're eventually going to become disabused of. And at that point, they're going to lose their faith. And in that sense, that kind of evangelism is very dangerous. But, you know, we can't overgeneralize and say that all evangelists are dangerous, because I think some of them see beyond that.
Yeah.
It's also the community of religion, in my opinion, can be dangerous as well, because it's immediate compare. You walk into a room at a church, I have torn shoes, the guy across from me believes in the same God that I do, but he's got a nice car and nice shoes, and all of a sudden you start attributing your lack of faith or your strength of faith based on what you see.
Yeah.
Which is another downfall of the religious system, in my opinion.
But more in the North American name it and claim it prosperity crap that's out there. What about the anthropomorphization of God, which is just a fantastic word to be able to get out on radio? So people want to try to pigeonhole Chris Langan and his spiritual beliefs, and I heard one guy, it sounded like a Jesus guy, who wanted you to sort of say that Jesus was the only way, and I don't think you took that bait. But what about just God? So we've been talking about God, but is this, what kind of God are we talking about, Chris? I mean, are we talking about any anthropomorphization? In other words, for the kids out there, God kind of, you know, we're created in his image, so therefore there's something about us that
is godly.
Precisely, yeah. Well, what God is a universal potential. I said before that God was ultimate reality. That means that he has to be a universal potential. That means anything you see any property that anything has in reality that you can actually look at or touch. This all comes from God. It comes from that potential. It is encoded in that potential, as in the CTMU, this is called syntax. And basically, everything that we see is supported in syntax, in the divine language that I was talking about earlier when I was talking about John 1:1. All right, so God basically, you can actually look at it like this. We human beings, as images of God, are embedded in God. Therefore, our properties are actually those of God as well. God is human to the extent that God embeds human beings like you and me.
Yeah, well, there's a scripture that says God has set eternity in man's heart, which to me, I would dumb it down to say there's a little bit of God in all of us, and we intrinsically at some point in our life know that.
Yes, well, there's actually a lot of God in all of us. There's nothing but God, because God is ultimate reality.
But you're not saying we are gods. You're not saying we're mini gods. You're not, what's that word I'm looking for, like some sort of Gnostic, anyway.
Right.
Absolutely not, because we are localized, and our consciousness is limited because of our localization, whereas God is a global phenomenon with an entirely different kind of consciousness. So no man can actually be God. But on the other hand, no man can be anything but God, because God is all there is. God is completely self-attributing and self-composed. There is nothing but God in the world, so whatever you are, that has to be God.
Let me throw this out at you. You speak a lot of the elite, the geniuses of the world, the great thinkers. How does that sort of language contrast with the teachings of Jesus, where he speaks of humility and the greatest shall be the least before God and the least shall be the greatest?
Well, all that means is that you really do have to keep a lid on your ego. I was just talking about our localization, the fact that we are not actually as big as God in the sense that our consciousness is that expanded, that enlarged. That's basically what Jesus was talking about. You can't get the idea that you are God. You can't equate yourself to God. Yes, you're an aspect of God or a part of God, but you are restricted in that sense because you can't see everything. You can only see what's in your immediate vicinity. Now, a lot of these people who are out there, who are running the world, these techie billionaires, and I don't know who the hell else is out there who thinks they run the world, but a lot of them have gotten very big heads on their shoulders, and they think that they can make decisions in lieu of God. They can't do that. They're trying to usurp teleology and actually trying to run the world the way they want to run it, which is the way that works for them economically and socially. And that's not right.
Okay, I don't know how to ask this without sounding like a jerk, like the guy that you want to throw punch at the door of the club. You know what I mean?
It brings back memories. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. So here we go, he says from a safe distance. Yeah. Why should we trust you?
Well, I'm not asking anybody to trust me sight unseen. I'm doing things like publishing papers. I mean, if you do your homework, you're going to find out exactly what it is I'm saying. Then, once you find out what it is I'm saying, you can try to get around it. You can try to construct rebuttals or refutations of whatever it is I've said. And I think that if you try to do that, you're not going to be able to. And then you can take a lesson from that. Well, the fact that I haven't been able to refute what he's saying, maybe that means there's something to it. And then you can kind of gain trust that way.
So in other words, what I'm hearing, I love saying that. I've said that 9 times with you, Chris. In other words, you want us to actually do the work, listen to what you're saying, process it ourselves, as opposed to sit back in our lazy boy chairs and see what kind of degrees you have or what kind of institution you work for or what kind of, I don't need to keep going with that example. I think you understand what I'm saying. Because the weird, I probably should not say that. Let me see. I can't backtrack.
In other words?
Yes, in other words. No, the interesting thing about you, man, is you're just like a farmer dude. You're not academia. You're not, you know, Mr. Bookseller guy. You're not speaking tour guy. You're not Mr. TED Talk. You're a farmer with
Johnny Wonder guy.
With you're Johnny Wonders guy, which means nothing.
Yeah, I'm just a regular guy. I'm sitting here in a farmhouse, about 120 years old. It's small. I'm in my work clothes. I wear blue jeans. I got a tank top on. And I'm going to be going outside and doing some work soon, actually doing chores, feeding horses and cows, and I don't set myself up on a pedestal like many scholars do, thinking that I don't have to work. I mean, we all have to work. If everybody were able to roll up their sleeves and get out there and do a little bit of work to make society a better place without sitting on their asses 24/7, I think that we'd be living in a paradise.
That's why I want him and Jordan Peterson on the same
team. Yeah, exactly.
They would be besties.
It's all. Well, we're talking about tend your own fire, too, right?
Taking finding meaning through responsibility.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Yep.
Everybody thinks that somebody else is going to do the work. You got to stop thinking that way.
Yeah.
We all need to do some work to make this world a better place.
Chris Langan, I've saved the best question for last. Here it goes. I want to know your craziest bouncer story.
Craziest bouncer, man. There are so many of them. I couldn't even begin to
like,
come by.
Let me just share. This will give you time to think about it, because here's mine. I grew up in a funeral home, and I threw a party once. I invited 15 people. About 300 showed up because they got around the school party at a funeral home. I had to bounce my own party. I hope my dad's not listening right now, because I had to pull people out of caskets.
Mm.
Good for you.
Out of caskets?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I was involved in quite a few like riots and major you know, bad things happening. One of the worst things that I hated to do was actually work a party for like a homecoming party or a graduation party for high school kids. There were some of the worst. That was a bad crowd. I mean, I worked in they hired me to work one of those engagements at a motel one time in the Hamptons out there. And these kids came from somewhere in eastern Suffolk County. And they came and they totally wrecked the place.
Oh, man.
All the clothes torn off my back. I was like, I mean, there were just like 100 of the little buggers. And I just, as fast as I'd throw them out, a new problem would erupt inside, of course, because somehow, you know, I mean, I wasn't giving them any booze, but whether they brought their own or whatever they did, they were all drunk as a bunch of little skunks.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and this is the kind of thing that, you know, those were one-off gigs. As far as as far as working in the bars was concerned, there's just all kinds of stuff. I mean, you ever watch a wise guy movie?
Yeah.
All of the guys that own those bars, out east especially, are connected.
Yeah.
In the Italians, in the Sicilian sense.
Yeah.
And, you know, there were a lot of experiences like that. I mean, I had a guy who worked the bar, offer, you know, he said, hey, you know, do you mind taking a ride with me? So I said, no, no problem. Took a ride with him. We pull up to this pizza parlor. He says, hey, you want a slice of pizza? And I said, yeah, sure. He says, well, why don't you come in with me? So we walk in there, and suddenly I realize that the guy behind the counter, the pizza guy, was getting shaken down for a payment that he owed the guy who owned the bar that I worked for. And suddenly I was placed in the capacity of a kind of a leg breaker. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
At that point, I had to say, no, you know, let's just get out of here, you know, because the guy started, you know, he started chimping out, basically, and, you know, ran to the back room. I thought he was going to get a gun, so I said, look, just come with me, Vinny.
And so I quit, Vinny. I'm going to go find God.
this guy runs out, starts shooting, jumps into a car, and actually tries to run us over with his car.
When that happens.
Barely got out of there. And I mean, this is the kind of thing that if you're a professional bouncer for 25 years, the way I was, I mean, there's just all kinds of this stuff out there. I mean, you ever watch that movie Roadhouse?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you get hired to bring in a crew of guys, you know, basically a bar is going under because it's got so much trouble, and they'll hire you and your crew of guys. You've got a reputation for this kind of thing. You go in order to clean everything up, and, you know, it takes maybe 2 weeks, maybe it takes a month, but finally, in the end, everything is okay. And you'd be surprised the kind of things that go on there.
So funny. I'm just busting. I want to say, hey, how you doing? That's all
how
I want to say.
Doing?
Dude,
forget about it.
Forget about it. Chris, you are an interesting cat. Duh. I mean, that's a duh factor. But just the contrast. You're sort of this, you know, contradiction, basically, in so many ways. And I think that's what's refreshing. I think, you know, you play against type. That's why everyone digs you, man. So, Chris, I want to thank Johnny Lang for introducing us.
Johnny Wonder, what's whatever.
I mean, Johnny Wonder. Who's Johnny Lang? Oh, yeah, singer.
Player.
Anyway, I want to thank this guy beside me. Yo, how you doing? Thanks for hooking me up with Chris Langan.
You want to go to the beach?
Which
way to the beach?
To get a sandwich.
Over the bridge.
Oh, man. Chris, thanks for your time, dude. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, Drew, thank you so much, and we'll see you later, Johnny.
Thank you, Chris. All right, talk to you soon.
Yeah, there you go, kids. There you go, ctmu.net. Go check them out, ctmu.net. Charlie, Tango, Moron.
Mulva.
Mulva. I can't remember her name.